Brother has taken the time to prepare a message for us tonight. I would ask each one of us to listen to the words he has and how they apply to our lives. So I'd ask for your careful and your prayerful attention for Brother Aaron Moser.
Thank you, Dwayne. Good evening to you all. Good evening to all those who are on live stream. And you can see my title tonight is about fasting. And I have to honestly say that I'm kind of preaching to myself because I really haven't engaged in fasting much until recently. You know, to my shame, I probably should be doing this a lot more after I studied for this and realized, you know, I've not tapped into something that God has given to us, a tool that He has and is at our disposal. And so, you know, I talk about fasting tonight coming from not that I'm an experienced faster. I'm not. It's just been something that I've done fairly recently in my life. And so if you look up fasting just on your Google search, you know, you'll get a whole bunch of information on fasting. And it all is coming from doctors and dietitians and people that are trying to tell you how to lose weight and things like that. It all has to do with health. Lots and lots of information, tons and tons. But nothing on really pops up about, you know, the spiritual side of fasting. Doesn't really exist. I even typed in, you know, fasting and prayer, and I still got lots of results for health and the benefits of it. And very few results, you know, came back for, you know, this tool that God has given to us. And, you know, you got to ask, why is that? Why is it that, you know, we as Christians, you know, and not us necessarily, but just Christianity as a whole, we don't engage in fasting. It's not out there. It's not a topic that's discussed very much. And one of the reasons why, you know, we've got something called food availability, right? Food security. We are living in a time when right now, if I send all of you out on an assignment, when I give you this picture, and I say, I want you to go find everything on this picture, within the hour, I guarantee you, you can find everything here. Within 10 miles of where we are right now. Exactly as it's shown up there. You know, throughout history, we can't say that, can we? You know, we live in a very blessed land where we're able to go out, we can find anything that's up there. Anything at all. We're food rich. Very food rich. You know, and it's because we're food rich, you know, our bodies are geared towards food. We eat. We eat every day. We don't have to worry about where our next meal is coming from. We're very blessed, very fortunate that we don't have to worry about where our food comes from. Looking up there, it's a lot, big variety of food. Again, you could probably go, I bet not even less, I bet less than 10 miles. Within 5 miles, we could find all this stuff right here. And quickly. You go to, there's two supermarkets close to us. I guarantee you can find everything on this page easily. You know, and that's some nice looking food in there. Mushrooms and eggs and, you know, got fruits and vegetables. Got your proteins in there. It's got everything, spices. And we can find it all within an hour, within 5 miles of where we are right now. We live in a blessed land to be able to find this bounty, this wonderful amount of food that we have. And so we have this availability. We don't have to really go out like that our ancestors did, and you know, our hunter-gatherer ancestors, where you know, food availability was, you didn't know what you're gonna eat that day. You didn't have a refrigerator you could wake up to and open up. You know, it was a lot different back then. Food scarcity was real. Feast and famine. There were times of plenty and times of lean. You know, even though we find the food, we then have to cook it. You know, we can spend a lot of time preparing food. When I worked at a restaurant, I was the baker, and one of my tasks is I had to make lemon meringue pies. Anybody here ever made a lemon meringue pie from scratch? Yeah. How long does it take, Kathy?
A long
time. And you have to do it just right. That topping on there, when you whip those egg whites, like There's too little, and there's too much, and there's this narrow window in between of when it's actually right. Otherwise, if you do it too little, you know, and you bake it, it falls. Do it too much, the consistency is not right. You know, so you spend time and then making the crust and making the filling, you know, zesting the lemons and everything. It takes a lot of time. I just found a recipe online from scratch, 7-hour prep time to make a lemon meringue pie. Tap Gary here. How long does it take you to smoke a 12-pound brisket, Gary?
17 hours.
17 hours to smoke a 12-pound brisket. Takes some time, right? Some thought, some effort. My wife, she makes wonderful pizza. She has a recipe, and she has to make the pizza dough the night before we eat the pizza. Dough has to sit for 24 hours to rise. And this takes time and effort. So if I wanted a brisket, barbecue brisket topped pizza and lemon meringue pie for dinner, it would take me 24 hours to prepare that one meal. And once I ate it, now I gotta clean up. You know, food takes time. If we wanna do it right, you wanna make it taste good, it takes time. But you know, a lot of us are lazy. I'm one of those people that's lazy. And we invented something here in America, we call it fast food. And we can have food quick. You know, that kind of creates some of its own problems though, doesn't it? This fast food, it's tasty, I like it. Imagine most of you probably have a favorite fast food place you like to go to. We like our fries, our fried chicken, chicken nuggets, burgers. You know, to make that food fast, it has to go through processing. And they add things like preservatives. Because it has to be shelf stable for a certain while, because it's all got to be sitting in the restaurant for a certain period of time before it's actually made. So it has to be ready to go at a moment's notice. And they add these things called preservatives. You know, when they first came out with preservatives, you know what they called them? Non-digestibles. Because they would put these things in your food because the molds and the funguses and the bacteria couldn't digest that food. So it staved off those things. And that's what makes it shelf stable. And then we eat that. Well, it's non-digestible. So do you think that does our bodies any good? No, it doesn't. We take in these things that our bodies can't handle, they can't deal with. We're literally poisoning ourselves with these high-processed foods. That's why there's such a push against them. You know, they're not good for you. Not good to eat all the time. And so we live in this culture where food is readily available, knowledge is readily available, and we are in the least, you know, I guess, famine-like state we've ever been in. You know, I can't even think of a time in my life when I couldn't find something I wanted. You know, the closest thing was COVID a few years ago, I couldn't find toilet paper. That's the closest to a famine I've ever gotten. And I was well fed the entire time. But we are living in a time that we are, even though we have abundance of food and abundance of knowledge and abundance of availability, we are poor physically. I did another Google search. And this is what I did a Google search, said increase in poor health. That's all I typed in. And this is the AI answer, right? Global health is experiencing a significant rise in poor health, characterized by a 49.4% increase in metabolic-related disability-adjusted life years. I don't know what that means exactly, but it doesn't sound good. Between 2000 and 2021, driven by obesity, high blood pressure, diabetes, this trend is fueled by sedentary lifestyles, poor diet, and an aging population with a notable rise in chronic illness among younger people. You know, we are the least food scarce we've ever been, and we're some of the most unhealthy we've ever been. And why is that? Not only is our bodies unhealthy, but our minds are unhealthy. The amount of people that need counseling and need psychiatric help is on the rise. People with mental deficiencies is on the rise. And we have more knowledge, more food, more health care available to us than we've ever had. Our spiritual health is declining. You look at the news and you can see the anger and the sin, the theft and the murder, the extortion, the human trafficking, all these things. We have the most available to us we've ever had, and yet we're sicker than we've ever been. So we've got to ask ourselves, is there a better, way? I think there is. Look in 4 Nephi, in the first chapter, verse 3. And it came to pass in the 36th year that the people were all converted unto the Lord upon all the face of the land, both Nephites and Lamanites. There were no contentions, no disputations among them. And every man did deal justly one with another. And they had all things common among them. Therefore, they were not rich and poor, bond and free, but they were all made free and partakers of the heavenly gift. And there were great marvelous works wrought by the disciples of Jesus, insomuch that they did heal the sick and raise the dead and cause the lame to walk and the blind to receive their sight and the deaf to hear. And all manner of miracles did they work among the children of men. And in nothing did they work miracles save were in the name of Jesus. I think this sounds like a mentally, physically, spiritually very healthy people. Don't you agree? They had their issues, but they were able to solve them. So how is it that this people was able to obtain this wonderful state? Is it because they had food stability? Probably not, but I bet they had food stability because no one was hungry. No one was in want. They dealt with one another, so they didn't have these mental deficiencies and anger and sin. There was no disputations, no contentions. They did deal justly one with another. They were fair and honest. So here they are. And then they had these miracles. Obviously they had sick because they had to heal them. It's not like all their problems went away. They still had, ailments of the body. But they were able to combat that. How do we obtain such a state? How do we obtain this kind of health? Spiritual, mental, and physical. I don't think we live in silos. Our bodies, our minds, our spirit, they're all intertwined. And they play on one another, and they rely on one another, and they interact with one another. So how do we get there? Well, there is in Isaiah in 55, verse 1. Ho, everyone that thirsteth, come ye to the waters. He that hath no money, come ye buy and eat. Yea, come buy wine and milk without money and without price. Wherefore do you spend money for that which is not bread, and your labor for that which satisfieth not? Hearken diligently unto me, and eat ye that which is good. Let your soul delight itself in fatness. Incline your ear and come unto me here, and your soul shall live, and I will make an everlasting covenant with you, even the sure mercies of David. Seek ye the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake his way and the unrighteous man his thoughts, and let him return to the Lord, and he will have mercy upon him and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. There is this path, this way. God has given us his word. He's given us his example. He has told us how to live. There's one component of this, again, that I have been missing from my life. Continuing on. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are my ways your ways, saith the Lord. I didn't understand what it was. And I should have just taken the Lord at his word. I didn't understand what fasting meant. I didn't understand how it applied. But God had told us, here's this tool, it's available to you. When he gives us a tool, and we use that tool, it comes with promise, it comes with benefit. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. For as the rain cometh down, and the snow from heaven, and returneth not thither, but watereth the earth, and make it bring forth bud, that it may give seed to the sower, and bread to the eater. So shall my word be that goeth forth out of my mouth. It shall not return unto me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please. It shall prosper in the thing whereunto I sent it. God has given us this tool. And it is not without promise. It is not without benefit to us. So like I said, I didn't understand this concept, this idea of fasting. And so we're going to go through what fasting is. So what is it? I'm going to talk about the physical side. We're going to go through a 24-hour fast and what that means. So if I start to fast, I give up eating. You know, we're so used to eating, we eat three meals a day, right? We give it up. So after 4 hours not eating, your body starts to release this hormone. It's called ghrelin, which stimulates hunger. You know, I've decided I'm going to fast, and what does my body do? You need to eat. Now I decide to follow Christ, and what happens? The devil comes in and says, here's an alternative. Here's something else. Here's this temptation. You know, our bodies, you know, they just work off of how they're supposed to work. They do what they're supposed to do. You're like, hey, you haven't eaten. You forgot that meal that I'm geared for. I've been eating three meals a day. I'm geared for this. You need to give it to me. You know, because our body acts like it's in crisis. After 4 hours, our body's like, hey, something's wrong. You know, we got this food routine. You're not sticking to it. You know, our bodies are designed to conserve energy. That's why we don't want to expend any energy that we've stored, right? Because there's this time that's coming. Our bodies think, hey, there's this time coming. We got to prepare for it where we won't have food. So I need to keep these fat stores. That's why we conserve energy. We snack. We store fat. We get cravings. Because our body is telling us, hey, when there's feast, you got to feast. Because there's a famine coming. But like I said, we live in a culture now, in a society now, where we don't have famine. And so we eat. And our bodies tell us to eat. You know, so much of human history, we did have to fight these things. You know, like us to talk about our ancestors in the, you know, way back in the caveman days, hunter-gatherers, you know, they had to go out, and every morning they had to go out in search of food. It took almost all their time to go out and find food. And so there were times they didn't come back with food. So their bodies, you know, were designed to deal with this, to cope with hunger and famine. So that's just after 4 hours, your body thinks there's an emergency going on. All right, so into hour 6 and 8, your blood sugar finally starts to decline. Nice gift that gives us is we get fatigue, irritability, headache. I think we call that hangry. Anybody been hangry before? I'm sure we all have. We felt that. We haven't eaten in a while. We start to get a little upset and irritable. You know, the reason that happens is because our body's now starting to go, hey, we got to switch energy sources, right? Our blood sugar is starting to go down now. So we're switching over. And your liver, it's like your body is designed to handle this, right? It's designed to deal with this. So as your liver stores something called glycogen. And so it starts to release glycogen in your bloodstream. Like, hey, we got to keep the blood sugar up, so we're going to release this glycogen. The brain's asking for, hey, there's a problem. Our stomach hasn't gotten any food. I need energy. Give it to me. So the liver takes over, starts dumping this glycogen into your blood system. You know, but here's an interesting thing about this, you know. As we don't eat, our brain becomes more focused. Our thoughts become more clear. And the reason being, again, like our ancestors who, if they weren't thinking clearly, and they weren't seeing clearly and acting appropriately, they might miss something. You could be walking by and be like, hey, that plant I know has a good root. I can grab that. There's a nest inside this bush. There's probably some eggs in it. I can grab it. I'm checking for the trail of this animal. You know, you become very focused. It's a benefit. The mind becomes focused. 10 hours fasting. Your brain, your liver is now maintaining your brain function at a normal level, right? Your blood sugars has gone away, your glycogen pumps up. However, you only got a small supply of glycogen in your liver, right? So as that diminishes, your body, your liver again says, all right, we need to fix this. So you start to release ketones. And the funny thing about ketones is your brain loves ketones, loves them. It actually makes your brain work better, makes it work more efficiently. The nervous system inside your brain becomes more efficient. Your thoughts begin to clear. Your focus. Again, because if we're starving or starting to starve, we're on the lookout. We got to find things. We got to plan. We got to make, what am I going to do? What am I going to find? And so your brain increases in clarity. Now that glycogen starts to reduce, Your liver is shifting from the sugar use now to burning fat. Fear of the starvation starts to subside. Another thing that happens is your cells and all your body start to operate more efficiently. These little things called, I think it's lysomes, I believe, if I remember right, get discharged into the body. They go into your cells and your mitochondria, they start to burn efficiently. Everybody remembers the mitochondria, the powerhouse of the cell? From our schooling, well, that mitochondria starts to burn at an efficient rate. Because it realizes, you know, the body realizes, hey, there's less fuel to go around. We're on limited reserves now, so we need to run at max efficiency. And your body takes over and starts to run more efficiently. The byproduct of that is our bodies produce less waste, less toxins from things in our body. It's beginning to tear things down that it doesn't need. Enters into a stage called autophagy. This is an amazing, amazing thing that takes place in the human body. It's this stress response. Our bodies get stressed out by the lack of food, and so as the food is not entering in, our body says, like, all right, well, we can't shut everything down, so we're going to start cleaning house. We're going to go in and find these cells that are damaged or weak. We're going to process them, destroy them, and use their components for fuel. So it begins to strip away things. You know, you have cancer in your body all the time. We all have cancer, but our bodies fight it off. Well, when we're in autophagy, it kind of goes in, starts cleaning out all these bad cells, cleaning things out. You go through this biological reset. Your body's going through and find, hey, I need fuel, I need things to work on. So it finds all the garbage, trashes it, gets rid of it, breaks it down. Amazing, amazing creation, aren't we? 12 to 14 hours, your insulin level has almost gone. It's very low because your pancreas is not kicking out any insulin anymore. So your pancreas gets to rest. When your pancreas begins to rest, you do this reset, this hormonal reset. Because we're so used to eating, our pancreas is always pumping out insulin, always pumping out insulin, always pumping out insulin, always pumping out. And it gets to rest. You know, that's one of the things that reduces the risk of diabetes. It's if you don't pump in your pancreas all the time. Now the downside, though, your cravings start to increase. Your stomach is still releasing that hormone that says, hey, you're hungry. You need to go find food. You need to go find food. And your cravings start to go up. This is realizing, like, hey, we only got so many reserves here. Go out and find something. 15 hours, your stomach is empty. There is nothing left in it, you know, but it's still producing these digestive enzymes because it's used to the schedule. But it starts to shut down slowly. And as it rests, your gut lining starts to repair itself. Inflammation in your gut goes away. You know, a lot of people that have IBS, you know, when they fast, they notice that their gut starts to feel better because that inflammation starts to subside. And the stomach begins to prepare this hole. If there's damage to the inside of your stomach, it focuses on that. All right, we're not focusing on digestion. We'll focus on healing, and it starts to heal. 17 hours in, one of two things is going to happen. You either get a nice high focus, or you get nice and highly irritable. Why does that happen? Well, if you're accustomed to fasting, your body's used to making this switch, you'll probably enter into a more higher focus. If you're not accustomed to fasting, you get irritable. And it's just like our Christian walk in life. We can be walking along, doing all the right things, and all of a sudden, you know, everything around us falls apart. Satan comes and attacks us. He's like, why isn't this working? Yeah, but those of us that have walked a Christian walk for a long time, we know the path. All right, I don't get irritable. I get focused. I got to hunker down. 18 to 20 hours, your body starts turning more aggressively to fat stores. Your body starts releasing triglycerides. Usually when you go and get your blood taken, they look for triglycerides. And we think of those as a bad thing. But when you're low on food, those triglycerides break down and they fuel your muscle. So they do have a good purpose. It's for when you're starving. and you're low on food, and it's famine time, your body begins to take care of itself. It protects the muscles that it has. Because I'm going to need those. Because I'm going to have to go chase something down. I'm going to hike up a hill, climb a tree to get my food. So it protects itself. Now, not everything in your body runs off of fat, though. There are certain organisms or pieces in your body, like your red blood cells, they have to have sugar. So in that fat breaking down process, your body produces glycerol. So your blood can operate. After 20 hours, your heart is beating efficiently. Your blood pressure goes down. The inflammation in your blood vessels is reduced. At 22 hours, your autophagy, that cleaning system, it's kicked up into high gear and it's cleaning everything out. 23 hours, you have something called a microbiome in your gut. It's all the bacteria that live in there. It begins to adjust. There's this bacteria that thrives when you have food in feast time, and it stays high. But you also have this bacteria that thrive in famine time. And if we've never let them grow, we never let them adjust, you have this imbalance in your system. It causes poor health. So we can reset that balance. Higher diversity improves your health. Intestines, now they're empty. They don't have much in it. Your intestines are very, very thin, very small. It's a very long organ, but it's very thin-walled. So it doesn't have food going through. Again, instead of doing its main job, passes off to the healing process. Begins to heal. Prevents toxins from entering the body. There's something called leaky gut where your intestines are damaged and you start releasing toxins into your body. And people get very sickly from this. But if nothing's there, you're like, all right, we got to do something. Let's go to repair. It goes to fix. And it goes to healing. You know, your entire body is in this active cellular cleansing state. 24 hours of fasting, your body begins to release human growth hormone. It increases as much as 5 times. You know, I know a lot of guys that I work with, firefighters, cops, you know, they go pay a doctor a lot of money so they can get a shot to increase their HGH levels. And here God has given us a free ticket. Free prescription to healing. That HGH helps repair cellular tissue and it protects your muscles, aids in fat burning. That's why they want it, right? We want lean muscle, we want fat burning. That's why they go get the shot, HGH, because that's what it does. But here, the natural way. Now, the natural point of this is, reduced energy level. We don't have that blood sugar flowing around our system anymore. That does have positives. You can get bursts of energy. You can go really fast. So you're not at your peak strength physically. I can't go in the gym and start bench pressing my max reps because I've got a reduced energy level. I don't have the sugar in my system, but my body is healing. What a wonderful God we serve, who knew we would need to be healed physically and mentally and spiritually. And he gave us this tool that we can use. It's free. It costs nothing. We can heal our bodies. We can heal the cells, the damage. Could heal our minds, we can begin to think clearly. We can heal our spirit. Now, it's not easy going hungry. Can your stomach is still pumping out that hormone? I need food. It growls, churns. So it's not easy to go without food. Because your body's geared for it. I need to go find food. Omni 1, verse 45. For there is nothing which is good save it comes from the Lord, and that which is evil cometh from the devil. You know, the Lord asks us to fast. What does the devil ask us to do? What does he provide? And now, my beloved brethren, I would that you should come to Christ, which is the Holy One of Israel. Partake of his salvation and the power of his redemption. Yea, come unto him. Offer your whole souls as an offering unto him. And continue in fasting and prayer. And endure unto the end, as the Lord liveth, you will be saved. You have this promise. This fasting leads to clarity and to healing of the body and the mind and the spirit. And it comes from the Lord. Here's this tool. Use it. It's free. It offers nothing but benefit. You have to wade through the hunger, stave it off. But look what happens. We go to healing. Just as the pain and agony of our Savior Christ on the cross saves, your hunger starts to save. So when do we fast? You know, there's lots of times that we fast, or should fast, or can, after someone passes away. You look in 2 Samuel in the first chapter, verse 12, you know, David, he has been running for his life from Saul. And he's in hiding at this point. And an enemy nation has come into Israel, and they have challenged Israel. Saul has gone out to lead his army. And they lose this battle. Saul himself takes his own life. Jonathan, who is David's best friend, dies in this battle. And numerous Israelites die in this battle. And someone comes from the battle, and they tell David the news. And this is what they did. And they mourned and wept and fasted until even for Saul and for Jonathan, his son. For the people of the Lord and for the house of Israel, because they were fallen by the sword. Entered into this mourning state, sadness. So they go into fasting because they need healing. They need to think clearly. Need to rest their soul and their body. When we seek wisdom, when we're unsure, when we can't control what's going on around us, just as Daniel, the prophet, Daniel chapter 10, when Daniel's been removed from his homeland, he's taken from his security, he's put into a foreign land, they don't worship the way he does. He is at the whim of the king. He's at the whim of all the other counselors that advise the king, and they make laws against him. They throw them in the furnace. They throw them in a lion's den. I can't draw my sword and fight all these people, Lord. What do I do? In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning 3 full weeks. He separated himself out. I ate no pleasant bread, neither came flesh nor wine in my mouth, neither did I anoint myself at all till the whole weeks were fulfilled. It was a different kind of fast. I think he ate something, but he did not eat food which pleased him. So I know there are those out there that have a medical condition. I got to eat with this medicine. Mothers that are nursing, mothers that are pregnant, can't exactly go on a fast. Diabetics, they can't fast. But you know, you could probably do this. You can probably eat foods that are simple. You can eat oatmeal with no sugar and no butter. It will sustain you. It does not taste great, but that's not the point. We are sacrificing something. I can eat vegetables, I can eat lettuce. It's not the most pleasing thing in the world, but you know what? It has nutrients in it. It can help you. I can eat simple things that don't bring me pleasure. I can get rid of, you know, my diet sodas, my fake sugars. Do simple things, drink water. Sacrifice. What happens? Verse 12. Then said he unto me, Fear not, Daniel. For from the first day that thou didst set thine heart to understand and to chasten thyself before the Lord. He did not enjoy this 3 weeks of eating. And to chasten thyself before thy God, thy words were heard. And I am come for thy words. I see your sacrifice that you've made. You've given this up. You've given up pleasure. Nothing has come into you that's pleasing. Merely sustaining. Now I'm here. And if you read on, he gives him this vision. He gives him answer. He gives him encouragement. Because he sought wisdom. He fasted from that which pleased him. Again, seeking wisdom, 3 Nephi, 12th chapter. The disciples, they have a problem. They're going about, they're teaching what they're supposed to teach, but then the question comes up, what do we name the church? For us today, we have the name, it's outside. But it wasn't always so. They didn't have the name. And so they asked. How did they ask? And it came to pass that as the disciples of Jesus were journeying, were preaching things which they had both heard and seen, and were baptizing in the name of Jesus, it came to pass the disciples were gathered together, and they were united in mighty prayer and fasting. And what does the Lord do? And Jesus again showed himself unto them, and they were praying unto the Father in his name, and Jesus came and stood in the midst of them, and saith unto them, What will ye that I shall give unto you? We have this tool. Of healing. That brings Christ down. To answer our questions. Seeking forgiveness. In 1 Samuel chapter 7, Israel had been living in sin, great sin. They were serving foreign gods, evil gods. Gods that required human sacrifice. Gods that required fornication and worship. Verse 3, And Samuel spake unto all the house of Israel, saying, If ye do return to the Lord with all your hearts, and put away the strange gods and Ashtaroth from among you, and prepare your hearts unto the Lord, and serve him only, and he will deliver you out of the hand of the Philistines. Like happened so many times in the Old Testament, they would fall away, and God would bring in a famine or an army. And if they did not turn, they were destroyed. And here it is no different. This army of the Philistines comes and they have no way of beating them back. They're not capable. Samuel comes in and says, You've got to change. And the children of Israel did put away Balaam and Ashtaroth and serve the Lord only. And Samuel said, Gather all Israel to Mizpah, and I will pray for you unto the Lord. And they gathered together to Mizpah, and drew water and poured it out before the Lord and fasted on that day. And said there, We have sinned against the Lord. And Samuel judged the children of Israel. They gave it up. Said, We need a healing. We have brought in fornication and murder. We need to be healed. When do we fast? You know, if we need to prepare for something. We have an example in Christ, Matthew in the 4th chapter. The greatest conflict take place. Christ had to be tempted by Satan himself. And what did he do? How did he prepare? Verse 2, when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, he was afterward hungered. He was at his weakest, physically. And yet, he withstood the temptation. He withstood Satan because he was strong spiritually. In his body, he was in touch with the Lord. Alma 12, the sons of Mosiah, they had this great task. They wanted to go out to the Lamanites and convert them. They were bloodthirsty people. And they murdered their brethren, took them into slavery. And they wanted to go and give them the gospel. So what did they do? Verse 5, but this is not all. They had given themselves to much prayer and fasting. Therefore they had the spirit of prophecy and the spirit of revelation. And when they taught with power and authority. Even as with the power and authority of God. They prepared themselves for the Lord's work. That's something that we all can do. If you're a Sunday school teacher, can you prepare for your Sunday school? We have a reunion coming up. Should we prepare by fasting and praying for that reunion? We have a youth camp. Should we prepare by fasting and praying? That those that go there should be fasting and praying, preparing themselves, healing their bodies, healing their minds, healing their spirits in the service of the Lord. Missionaries that go out in the field, should we pray and fast for them? That their work is good? We should. So how do I do this? How do I fast? First thing we need to do is we need to set the intention. Colossians 3, verse 2, set your affection on things above, not on things on the earth. You know, there's a proper way to fast, a proper way to heal. We shouldn't be fasting for more money, a bigger home. You know, this is a spiritual thing. We don't look to things on the earth. I need to improve my station here. That's not what fasting is for. You need to set the proper intention. Do I have a question of God? Do I have a sin that I need to overcome? Am I mourning for loss? Set your intention. What is it that you're going to fast for? You need to prioritize prayer with your extra time. You know, that time we talked about preparing food, making food, cleaning up food. It's gone. We have time. And in every instance that I can find, pretty much, you know, it's not just fasting. It's not a standalone thing. It's fasting and prayer. Prayer and fasting. So we need to prioritize the extra time with prayer. Reading our scriptures. Listening to things, you know, sermons, discussions. Drawing closer toward God. Healing of our soul. We need to be humble. Matthew in the 6th chapter, verse 16. Moreover, when ye fast, be not as the hypocrites of a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces. They may appear unto men to fast. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. We are not to make a show of this. We don't let everyone know that I'm fasting. You know, there's times when we can fast together. It's not what I'm saying. But if you've got something you need answering and you decide to fast, you go about normal. Men, you comb your hair, shave, trim your beard, whatever it is, take a shower. Women, you can put on your makeup, comb your hair. You look normal. Then the question comes, well, hey, what happens when I'm offered food? I go to work and there's the box of donuts. Hey, do you want one? No, I'll eat later. You don't make a show of it. We don't become the hypocrites. We don't do this trying to glorify ourselves. Isaiah 58. You know, fasting is just one part. It's a part of the whole. Cry aloud, spare not, lift up thy voice like a trumpet, and show my people their transgression, and the house of Jacob their sins. Yet they seek me daily and delight to know my ways, as a nation that did righteousness, and forsook not the ordinance of their God. They ask of me the ordinances of justice. They take delight in approaching to God. You know, that sounds good, right? You have this people that are doing what they're, it sounds like they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. And yet in the first verse, it's cry aloud, show them their sins. And these people question, wherefore we have fasted, say they, and thou seest not. Wherefore we have afflicted our soul, and thou takest no knowledge. We're doing the motions. We're coming to you, Lord. We're asking. Behold, in the day of your fast, you find pleasure. And exact all your labors. You're going through the motions. Behold, ye fast for strife and debate, and to smite with the fist of wickedness. Ye shall not fast as ye do this day to make your voice be heard on high. You don't do this so that you can prove your point. You don't do this so that we can be right, to show others that they're wrong. Verse 5, is it such a fast that I have chosen? A day for a man to afflict his soul, to bow down his head as a bulrush, and to spread sackcloth and ashes under him? Wilt thou call this a fast, an acceptable day of the Lord? You're going through the motions. You're making a show of your fast. Verse 6, is not this the fast that I have chosen? To loose the bands of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, that ye may break every yoke. Is it not to deal thy bread to the hungry, that thou bring the poor that are cast out into thy house? When thou seest the naked, that thou cover him, that thou hide not thyself from thy own flesh. We're to heal. Heal the wrongs that we see. Make right the wrongs that are out there. That's the purpose of fasting. If we can follow that purpose, verse 8, then shall thy light break forth as the morning, and thine health shall spring forth speedily, and thy righteousness shall go before thee, and the glory of God shall be thy rearward. Then shalt thou call, and the Lord shall answer. Thou shalt cry, and he shall say, here I am. Thou take away from the midst of thee the yoke, putting forth the finger and speaking vanity. And if thou shalt draw out thy soul to the hungry and satisfy the afflicted soul, then shall thy light rise in obscurity, and thy darkness be as noonday. And the Lord shall guide thee continually, and satisfy thy soul in drought, and make fat thy bones. And thou shalt be like a watered garden, and like a spring of water whose waters fail not. We are to heal those around us, to cover the naked, to feed those that are hungry, to make up for the gap. That is what the purpose of fasting is to heal. And they that shall be of thee shall build the old waste places. Thou shalt raise up the foundations of many generations. Thou shalt be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of paths to dwell in. If thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing thy pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of the Lord, honorable, and shalt honor him, not doing thine own ways, nor finding thine own pleasure, nor speaking thine own words, then shalt thou delight thyself in the Lord. And I will cause thee to ride upon high places of the earth, and feed thee the heritage of Jacob thy father, from the mouth of the Lord has spoken it. Now this restoring, repairing, building foundations, it happens in the body. It happens in the mind. This is the purpose of fasting, is to heal. You know, it's asking a lot, isn't it? And so then the question comes, do I have to fast? And you know, there's not a single commandment anywhere that we fast. Not a one that commands us. Is that the right question? Is that what I should be asking? Do I have to do this? What's the minimum that I can get away with? You turn to the book of Joel. If you ever read Joel chapters 1 and 2, you know, it speaks of the day of the Lord. If you read through Joel chapter 1 and most of chapter 2, it does not paint a pleasant picture. It speaks of judgment and terrible consequences. Chapter 2, verse 1, blow ye the trumpet in Zion and sound an alarm in my holy mountain. Let all the inhabitants of the land tremble, for the day of the Lord has come, for it is nigh at hand. It's talking of judgment. We're all going to face it. And it talks about the sin. It talks about fear, dread, shame, guilt. That's what you get if you're asking about the minimum. What's the least that I can do? The correct question, how much of God do I want? Joel chapter 2, verse 15, blow the trumpet in Zion, sanctify a fast and call a solemn assembly. Gather the people, sanctify the congregation, assemble the elders, gather the children and those that suck the breast. Let the bridegroom go forth out of his chamber and the bride out of her closet. Let the priests and the ministers of the Lord weep between the porch and the altar. Let them say, spare thy people, O Lord, and give not thine heritage to reproach, that the heathen should rule over them. Wherefore should they say among the people, where is their God? Heal. Then will the Lord be jealous for his land and pity his people. That is what we should be asking. How much God do I want in my life? How much sacrifice am I willing to give? If I'm willing to sacrifice food for a time, I'll move. I'll heal my body, heal my mind, heal my spirit. As I pray and draw closer to God, as I read his word. So that's the question. How much of God do I want? You know, as we draw this to a close, one of the things about fasting, your tongue has not tasted food. Like many other systems in the body, it kind of starts to go dormant. And then when you come out of the fast, and you again begin to taste food, your taste buds amplify. It tastes good. Feels good. You bring that food into your body, which has been so desiring. That's what the purpose of fasting is to bring us closer to God, to bring us so we can taste what is good and remember the blessings that he has given to us. I thank you for your time, and I hope that tonight you have gained something from this. I hope that you all go out now with a newfound respect and a willingness to sacrifice and fast before your God.